T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Paul here. Jor has the day off. She's just hanging out, enjoying her life, and more power to her. She will be back on Monday. We talked about the DNR a couple of minutes ago and mentioned rough fish. And, you know, my ignorance of rough fish. I said, what are rough fish? And listeners chipped in, carp are rough fish. They congregate towards the surface and can open up holes in the ice. Bottom feeders like suckers, catfish, bullhead. Rough fish not desirable for food or sport can be large like carp, and movement can weaken the ice. I did not know that. I've been here 38 years. I like to fish. The ice fishing, I mean, the true hardcore pros are out ice fishing. I prefer it when it's 50 degrees or warmer. With us now is somebody who I met at the recent Techni Awards in Minneapolis, a true tech head himself, and I say that with all love and admiration, Representative Jim Nash, who represents District 47A, Carver County, Waconia area. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
Appreciate you stepping up and coming down to the station. And, you know, when Jordana is gone, I can pretty much do what I want.
Well, I can tell that you're scraping bottom if you've invited me on in her place.
Well, we'll see how the hour goes. But I appreciate your willingness to come on the air. Six kids?
That's true.
You look remarkably sane.
Well, it's a lot of work to stay that way. And my wife is the one that takes the brunt of everything.
She does the heavy lifting.
She's the saint.
And you're an entrepreneur. I know you sold a business, a cybersecurity business, this past summer.
Yeah, an IT business, more computer storage. And now I'm on a computer free binge in that area. But I'm working in cybersecurity, which most people don't understand isn't necessarily an IT issue. It's more of a business issue.
And every business now is a technology business, and every business, it seems, is increasingly vulnerable, right?
Absolutely. Everything from high-tech organizations all the way down to the lowly donut shop. You might have seen an article in the news recently that Dunkin' Donuts was breached. So nobody is safe.
Dunkin' Donuts. So what are we going to do? Go back to just a cash transaction society and show up with my abacus? I mean,
Well, you can send messages back and forth on clay tablet if you like, but that's going to be tough
Slow.
To do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the simple reality is we are in a very digital age that's not going to turn around, but people need to be careful. People need to be mindful. And the reality is that there are certified bad guys, as I call them, out there that want to take your information. If it's actionable in the dark web, they'd like to have it and they will sell it. And these are sometimes individuals, but it's not the Matthew Broderick movie from years ago, War Games. It is literally nation states who hire people to wake up every day, go to work, and hack.
I saw today, and I don't know if it's verified or confirmed yet, but maybe the Chinese were behind the Marriott hack. We don't know, but I mean, what can people do, and just the elevator pitch, because there's a lot of stuff I want to get to, and I want to be able to take some calls from our amazing listeners. But what do you tell people when they ask, Jim, what can I do to protect myself, protect my data? Is there more we can be doing even at a state level to secure our data?
Well, that's a couple of hours all by itself. But, yeah, some of the simple things that your listeners can do is to use a different password for different services, or use something called a password manager. There are services out there that will actually put your passwords in a vault, and it's a software application that allows you to log on securely. So there's that. But then I think one of the biggest things that has led to a number of high-profile breaches is called phishing. So you get an email. It looks like it's from Paul Douglas. And I'm, of course, going to open that and read whatever Paul has asked me to do.
Sure.
And Paul says, here, click on this. The simple reality is that many of those emails are from bad actors and who are trying to spoof you into clicking on something and through that exposing your network to compromise.
I get a couple of those every day, and I'm always amazed by the typos. Mm-hmm. That's usually a tip-off. If a company is sending me something and there's a typo in the header, you know.
Yeah, misspelled words, or if you're asked to log on to Amazon, hover your mouse over that link. And if it isn't simply amazon.com/login and the link that you're hovering over is like 27 characters and it's got lots of dashes, and don't click on that. Do not. If Amazon wants to get a hold of you or some provider wants to get a hold of you, log on independently on a web browser that you initiate. Log on, and there should be something in a messaging center there alerting you to what it is that they'd like you to know.
That's very good advice. What do you use for a password manager?
Oh, I use a lot of different things. There are a lot of free services out there. I don't want to pitch one over another.
Oh, go ahead.
Nah, go ahead.
Okay, all right. That's something I need to do. Hey, I don't want to bury the lead, the $1.5 billion surplus lead.
Yeah.
And I know there has been talk of a possible hike in the gas tax. What is your reaction, and what would you like to see moving forward in terms of how we use that surplus responsibly? Mm-hmm. Whether it's education, transportation, et cetera, what is your vision and the GOP's vision?
Well, so I'd say that the GOP vision for that is to whatever the desired new taxes might be by the Walz administration or the House majority, which will be the DFL, to think about the fact that you have a $1.5 billion surplus, and before you rush to perhaps raise a gas tax or implement some other new spending that would be in the form of a new tax on Minnesotans, to first look at the surplus and ask yourself the hard question, why in a time of surplus are we going to initiate a new tax? And it could be used for anything, and that's really what the legislative process will lead to. We'll debate them on the floor, and we'll decide one way or another how that works. But I think that the interesting thing for Minnesotans is to ask their elected representative, why are you proposing a tax in a time of surplus?
Property tax relief, perhaps?
Well, property tax is really levied by the municipalities.
Right.
Statewide business property tax is something that is at the legislature, but individual homeowner property tax is a municipal issue.
So in terms of priorities, perhaps your priorities going forward with a $1.5 billion budget. And by the way, Mark Dayton inherited, what, a $6 billion deficit back in 2011. So things have been moving in the right direction.
I'd say that under the last 4 years of Republican leadership in the House, our diligence in taxing policy and really making Minnesota a more business-friendly place, you've seen these revenues increase. I think one of the biggest things that we should be talking about that we don't seem to be talking about is tax conformity. And we tried it at the end of the last legislative session. And in a nutshell, to make it very simple, because it can get kind of nerdy, tax conformity is the federal government passed a 40-year record lowering of taxes. The state of Minnesota is not matching up to those particular tax policies. So when listeners go to do their taxes this spring, Minnesota tax policy is going to be out of whack with the federal. And I would suggest to your listeners, when they get their tax forms from their employer at the beginning of the year, to begin engaging their tax professional, because it could take a very long time unless the state of Minnesota in the legislature decides to conform to the federal tax bill. If we do, then it will be much easier and many people will benefit from it. But if the DFL majority in the House chooses not to, it's going to be a very difficult time for individual taxpayers of all income levels.
Talk to me about what's happening in Wisconsin right now. Obviously, we have a different scenario here, and we will be, what, the only state in the nation, right, with with divided governance, with a GOP-led Senate and a DFL-led House. How did Wisconsin get to the point where it is? And people talk about gerrymandering. And I mean, do you care to comment? And my hope is that we don't go down that rabbit hole here in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think you introduced me as a GOP stalwart.
Stalwart.
And I'm a very conservative individual. But what I see happening over in Wisconsin is a little disappointing. Elections have consequences, and that's an idiom that we all agree with.
Right.
I don't understand necessarily why they would do this last-minute rush to change things. I certainly understand sticking it to the other guy, as it were. I just find that this is accelerating the divide that we see politically in our country right now. And whether I agree with changing policy, you should do it not on the outs. Do it when you come back into session and go down that way. I may be alone in Republican politics on that one, but I just see it as a little unseemly.
All right. When we come back, I want to talk about disruption, reinvention, some of the technological turmoil going on out there right now, and how a rising tide can lift all boats, including boats in greater Minnesota. So that people don't have to gravitate to the Twin Cities Metro to succeed, to get ahead. And I know there are some amazing stories happening in greater Minnesota, but how do we extend that and make sure that the entire state can participate in an economic upsurge? Curious as an entrepreneur and a legislator to get your thoughts on that. When we come back with Jim Nash, and certainly welcoming your questions. I think we're going to take your questions at 35. So if you can hang on, we certainly want to take questions for Jim Nash when we come back. That's next on CCO. Paul Douglas with Jim Nash, Assistant Majority Leader. Are you going to be Assistant Minority Leader?
Yes, my colleagues were kind enough to elect me to be an Assistant Minority Leader coming up in the next session.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
How does the dynamic, how does the calculus change for the GOP as the minority? Where's the common ground? Where's the low-hanging fruit? What do you think can get done to help all constituents across the state?
That's a fine question. And I don't know that I'm in a place to answer it until we go back. But from my perspective, from my seat, there's certainly a lot of things that we need to work on as Minnesotans. And I think some of that is, you know, simple road and bridge. How do we make sure that people are driving to work on roads that are in fine shape because they pay a lot of taxes?
Right.
How do we make Minnesota a business-friendly state? That's something that we need to work on. But also, as you had alluded to, you know, what do we do to make sure that outstate Minnesota is thriving to the same level as the metro area or the large urban hubs?
Yeah, I just the whole model, and it served me well. I got a 4-year college degree. I got a bug to start businesses on the side, and I've been dabbling ever since. And yet, that doesn't work for everybody. I mean, we have these college graduates that are graduating with just enormous sums of debt. And this notion, Jim, that you get a degree and you're set for the next 40 years. I mean, I saw some research. Today's graduate will have 2 to 4 different careers, as many as 24 different jobs. I mean, this whole notion of the gig economy, how do you prepare people to be ready for jobs that don't even exist? This whole notion of continuous lifelong training, retraining, relearning. And I think young people have the right idea. They're always soaking up new skills. But how do we translate that into greater Minnesota today?
I certainly think a liberal arts education is important because it exposes you to a lot of different thoughts and philosophy, makes you a critical thinker. But I think that for the last, 25, 30 years, we've been told that if you don't go to college, you'll never amount to anything.
Right.
And I think that's just the largest amount of bunk that we've been sold. And for the last 4 years, I've been trying to get something done at the Capitol with my friends from both sides of the aisle. And it's essentially using the PSEO model that we have in our schools that was started under Governor Perpich at the time, that we make it vocational post-secondary. So I carried a bill that was called VPSEO, And what it does is it exposes high school students to a trades-like environment early in high school, possibly when they are a sophomore. And it exposes them to a number of different things. It could be highly skilled CNC milling, or it could be home building, or it could be cybersecurity, or a number of things. And you're right. We have a graduating college with degrees in medieval French poetry and archaeology that are horribly unemployable but heavy in debt. We can't do that to our students. And maybe somebody wants to be a medieval French poetry major. Not that I don't even know that it's offered. It's just the example I always use. But I think the argument is we have students that are coming out of college who went there not knowing what they wanted and also leave there not knowing what to do. And I think that we have a thriving economy right now, and my contacts in the trades say that they're always looking for people. And we need to one, do a cultural change and say, you know what, if you come home at the end of the day and you need to wash your hands with a nail brush, that's fine work. Our country was built on that, Paul.
Mm-hmm. No question.
And why did we ever think it was great to get away from that?
Yeah, white-collar gigs, not everything they're chalked up to be.
No.
And we touched on this, and we don't have much time here. We have to take a break. But this notion of higher bandwidth, more bandwidth, higher internet speeds, I mean, that it seems a little utopian. I mean, I realize businesses factor bandwidth into consideration before, hey, are we going to relocate in Montevideo or Sauk Center or Wadena? Internet speed is important, but we can't mandate that. If the numbers don't work, how do we get beyond that?
Well, and I think that you touch on the conversation of what is the role of government in this particular area.
Right.
Does government make the investment like they did back in the day and with the Tennessee Valley Authority and bringing electricity to people in the outstate? That's a question that has to get solved, I think, at the legislature. From my personal perspective, I don't think that the government needs to fix that. That as a laissez-faire capitalist, if there is a rate of return to be had, that private enterprise will bring that forward. That's my paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be everybody else's, but I just think that as a chronic capitalist and an entrepreneur, I would like to see a private business figure out how to bring that and then reap the rewards.
And maybe it requires innovation. I mean, to make this scalable so that everybody can have, you know, high-speed internet statewide, so we don't have to make excuses. Because I think a lot of that is when we talk about retraining and being able to see videos on your computer, mm-hmm, or your phone, and being able to have to gain the new skills to be employable, to be ready for that job when it comes up, you know, I think connectivity is part of the challenge.
It absolutely is. And I think also a mindset of being willing to reinvent yourself, as you had said. And I've done that myself. My degree from the University of Nebraska is in geographic information system. I don't use that at all.
Wait, it's not French poetry?
No. It was tempting. It was very tempting.
There are some days.
Yeah. Yeah, but my degree is in political geography and GIS, and I don't use that at all. But being willing to reinvent yourself and having access to tools, I think, is important.
Absolutely. A conversation with Jim Nash, GOP, currently the assistant majority leader.
For a little bit longer now. When we come back in January, I'll be assistant minority leader, and that'll take some getting used to. But
deep breath.
Deep breath. Take a pause. It'll be okay.
And speaking of pause, we're going to take a pause. But when we come back, 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. Do you have any questions for Representative Nash? Anything on your mind? Anything you agree with, disagree with? A specific request? Give us a call when we come back on CCO. Jor is off today. She's off tomorrow. She'll be back on Monday. She's hanging out, relaxing, decompressing. I miss her. Miss my partner here. But in the meantime, I'm hanging out with Jim Nash, Representative Nash, from the Minnesota House of Representatives.
GOP, talking about some of his priorities, his vision for translating prosperity to the entire state, not just pockets of prosperity. How do we get more people doing better? Terry in Mankato, thank you for calling in. How you doing?
Hey, that was fast, Paul. Thank you very much. Representative Nash, hello. Thank you for your comments. I have something that I'd like to say quick in regards to the trade jobs. I listen to the radio a lot and listen to, home repair, home maintenance programs a lot. And Glenn Hagee, he's passed away now, late Glenn Hagee, always maintained that plan, home repair, home improvements, things like that. He always said it didn't matter how much money you had to pay for it. There weren't the people out there to do it anymore that like there used to be, plumbers, electricians, mm-hmm. carpenters, etc.
Yep.
And he's right on. He's right on that. Representative Nash is right on the ball with trying to promote that, because there's a lot of good jobs out there, in those fields. And that's all I had. Thanks for the program.
You bet. Hey, thank you, Terry. How would you respond to that?
Well, first, Terry, thanks for the call. And I agree that there are a lot of very talented people who do this work, and they're getting old. We need to recognize that plumbers can make great money, carpenters can make great money, and that there is honor in that job. I mean, realistically, as the father of six, I want to be able to provide for my family well. Doesn't mean I have to have a highfalutin, fly around the country, wear a suit every day job.
Mm-hmm.
If you can go home and know that you've done your very best and you enjoy the work that you do and you make cabinets for a living, great. I told you a story on the break about a friend of mine who is one of the premier tile people in the Twin Cities. And he does very well for himself. He's provided well for his family. And he's been doing tile since he was 18 years old. And he's become a true artist. He is a craftsman in the truest sense of the word.
Right.
What an honorable thing that is. And why aren't we promoting that to people all around the state of Minnesota?
I respect anybody who does anything well, who really has a passion for what they're doing. And if you do it well, usually the profits come, right? You can, if you do well, you're going to do well over time, right?
Absolutely.
All right, let's try to jam in a few more calls. Dan in St. Louis Park, welcome to the show. Hey, Dan, are you there? Dan, are you still with us? Yeah, let's go to Richard in Minneapolis. Hey, Richard.
Yes, hello. I saw several documentaries where in Japan, the companies train the people in the careers. Most of the emphasis is put on companies training the people into their career, and then you don't have to worry about big college debt, and most of their training is done in high school. College is just kind of a waiting place for a company to pick them up, and this seems like a smarter approach.
I mean, education is being disrupted, right? Again, we've been talking about this—the whole need for a four-year degree and spending all that money. There are other options now. Everything is being disrupted. Show me a safe gig. I would argue that if you're an artisan, if you're a craftsman, whether it's a framer or a plumber or an electrician, mm-hmm. that may in fact be more sustainable than hopping from white-collar gig to white-collar gig every other year.
I would agree. I have a lot of friends that went to high school with me, and some of us chose that white-collar pathway, and it's worked out well for us. But I remember a friend of mine named Lon who took every shop class that he could possibly take. And that was at the time where people were being told, you got to go to college to mm-hmm. be something.
Right.
Lon now owns a ginormous earth-moving business, and he's worth millions of dollars. I think he could buy and sell a number of us a couple times over. And that's just a great example of pursuing what is your passion and recognizing what's right for you and what's not right for you.
Just
curious to get your feedback on this. I had to move to where the opportunities were in the broadcasting business. It's sort of simplistic to think that the opportunities are going to come to you as a meteorologist. You have to go to where the job openings are. So I've worked outside New York. I've worked in northeastern Pennsylvania. Worked in Chicago. So I've hopped around. And there are people, though, that for good reasons, whether it's health reasons, taking care of their kids, their parents, they can't move. They are stuck. How do we help those people reinvent themselves and gain the skills that they need to make more money, to diversify their risk so that they're not dependent on a low-paying service job?
Well, I certainly think that educating people as to the what's available at like a local community college mm-hmm. or a two-year degree program, or even I was just recently named to the board of advisors at Metro State University's Min Cyber program, and that's a fascinating thing to take a well-educated person that might be technologically inclined but not educated on that. Put them into a two-year program, and they can come out and they can enter the cyber workforce. Or they could get a four-year degree and be really at the top of their game. So there are a lot of opportunities that are out there. I think that the term education is always connoting a four-year degree, and that's not the case. Education could be a nursing degree from a place that offers a nursing program. Letting people understand that to be educated doesn't necessarily mean a four-year degree.
But you also have to take personal responsibility, right? Nobody's going to come and save you. Nobody's going to hold your hand. You have
Correct.
To want this for yourself and take the steps, make the time, make the investment in time to be able to reach for that next gig. Dan in St. Louis Park, you're back.
Sorry about that. My phone acted up. I want to thank you, Paul, for making a good man like Jim available and making these people available to us. I'm a tradesman. I'm out there getting my hands dirty. I love it. But I think what's really frustrating, if you want to expand into another trade, to be an apprentice for a lot of men in their middle ages, it's very, very difficult. I wish that a guy could take tests to prove competency, even if he had to pay a couple grand. To verify competency, he shouldn't have to go and be an apprentice at $10 an hour carrying pipe and digging ditches every day. I mean, if you can do the work and you can prove competency, you should be able to pull permits in HVAC, gas, other things. I'm a plumber. That's what I do for a living. I'm a master plumber. And that's really frustrating. I think government has gotten in the way and has this, and I think it's very favorable to unions, unfortunately, where they kind of control more than they do than they should, and it keeps a middle-aged man from making a career move because of having to start as an apprentice when he may have the competency to do a lot more than that.
All right,
that's my opinion.
Hey,
it's
Dan,
of America. Yeah,
thanks for listening. Let's hear what Representative Nash has to say to that.
I'd say amen to that. Government gets in the way of a lot of good things, just simply because they want to check a box and make sure that somebody is able to do something. You think back to the general handyman back in the day, or I live in farm country, realistically. If you want to get someone who can do just about anything, get a farm kid. Mm-hmm. Farm kids know how to do a lot of stuff. But Dan's right. If we wanted to make the transportability of a career from one place to the next, a little less regulation would go a long way.
Jim Nash, we have to take a break and a couple of minutes here at the end of the hour. Thank you for hanging in there with me today.
Happy to do it.
This is a work day for you, right?
It is.
Okay. You're
but
working.
It is. My employer is pretty flexible with our time. And I've said the word cybersecurity enough that, you know.
Yeah. You've done your deed.
Yeah.
All right. Back with Jim Nash, Representative Nash, for a few minutes here before we have to say goodbye. Jim, first of all, thank you for coming in.
And just thanks for having me on.
Having a conversation, not gotcha radio. And by the way, happy to have people on from the DFL. We want to have as many voices, different voices, on the air as possible. Let listeners who are very mature and very bright make up their own minds.
Absolutely.
We're not here to tell you what to think or what is news. We're here to expose you to a lot of different ideas. What worries you? What is there anything from a Minnesota level, a state level, that keeps you up at night? What, if anything, is a source of angst for you politically or otherwise?
Well, a couple things. The tax conformity issue is a big issue, and we've talked about that. Mm-hmm. I'd say the cybersecurity issue, and I hate to beat a dead horse because that's what I do for a living, but I talk about it a lot at the Capitol. The state of Minnesota has great need to make major investments in cybersecurity because we take people's data by mandate. We require you to hand over a lot of data. It was one of the biggest disappointments of the last number of legislative years that we could not find consensus between Republicans and Democrats to make an investment in cybersecurity. And you've seen a couple of high-profile breaches. The Department of HHS, 21,000 health records were put out in the open. We need to do a better job. So those things keep me up at night a lot.
The polarization right now in politics at a national level, thankfully, it isn't quite as severe at a local level, at a state level, is it? I mean, things are a little more civil.
Well, when you're on the campaign trail that we just got off of, there were times that we went out to help other GOP candidates, and it got pretty testy at the door. And opponents of various political candidates also made it very personal. And that's regrettable. I try in every race I've ever run to never attack my opponent. Let's talk about the issues. You can attack an opponent's beliefs, but never them personally. We've made this personal sometimes.
You know, with the antagonism, again, at all levels of politics, it seems, the name-calling, who in their right mind would want to go into public service, right? I mean, knowing that you're going to be dragged and your family, to some extent, is going to be dragged through the mud, how does the pendulum swing back where compromise isn't a dirty word?
Well, you've quoted President Bush there, the late President Bush. I honestly don't know necessarily. There have been times where at the Capitol I'm attacked. I offered a pro-Second Amendment bill and was afterwards told that that person wished that I was shot and killed in front of my family. We're talking policy issues here. You should never go down that road. I think what it's going to take is some bold leaders who are willing to say, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, we're friends, we don't agree on everything, but let's have a civil conversation. And I'm a Republican, and I would welcome a civil conversation with any Democrat here on your radio show or anywhere else. Let's have that conversation and show that we can be mature.
Let's debate the issues and not make it personal.
Correct.
Jim Nash, thank you. Thanks for joining
us
today,
and
good luck in 2019 and beyond.
Thank you.
And speaking of cybersecurity, when we come back, we talk with an expert on spoofing and hacks for your phone. Tis the season for all kinds of cybersecurity risks for your smartphone. That's coming up at 5:10. Stick around for that. Thanks for listening to CCO.
Let the debate begin over what to do with a big state budget surplus. That's at 5:03 on WCCO and KMNB FM HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.